We turn now to the documents that the Bush administration chose to release yesterday evening. They pull the curtain back a little bit more on the administration's thinking and strategizing about how to handle prisoners and interrogations. Ever since the revelations of the abuse at Abu Ghraib, Americans have wondered how far up the chain of command this scandal goes. It's also raised questions in the international community. Just today, the United States withdrew its United Nations Security Council resolution that would have exempted U.S. troops from international prosecution because it could not win the support on the Security Council as it had in years past. Analysts cited the scandal at Abu Ghraib and the abuse of prisoners as the reason why support was lacking this time around. The administration hopes to help its public relations with the release of the information last night. To read the primary papers, you can go to npr.org and join the conversation with your questions about what's in these newly released documents. 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now is Ken Roth, Executive Director of Human Rights Watch. He joins us from our bureau in New York. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us is Doug Kamek. He's on the phone from his office in Malibu, California, chair and professor of the constitutional law at Pepperdine University, previously head of the Office of Legal Counsel for President Ronald Reagan. That, of course, is in the Department of Justice. And Doug Kamek, always good to have you on the program.
Good to be with you, Neil.
And let me ask you first, in addition to releasing these papers, the administration yesterday, the Justice Department, repudiated a memo on torture that appeared to provide some legal thinking about its legality. That's most unusual.
Well, it is unusual, and I think the release of these documents is quite unusual. The documents reveal in great detail the extent to which the president on down considered the legality of various manners in which detainees could be treated and the legal requirements that guide that. It's in many ways, I think the release of these documents shows quite conclusively that the president has always directed that our military act in a humane fashion and consistent with international and domestic law principles, and that to the extent that others had requested greater authority, it was studied and studied carefully.
And eventually denied.
Was allowed for a brief period of time. Never was torture allowed, but a greater or more aggressive form of interrogation was allowed that was not torture, but even that more restrained form was withdrawn very shortly after it had been authorized by Secretary Rumsfeld. And in each case, his instruction was quite explicit that the detainees were entitled to humane treatment.
So you find that these documents prove the case conclusively?
I think anyone looking at the body of this material who would conclude that higher-ups somehow authorized torture or authorized procedures contrary to law would have a total lack of evidence. I do think it proves the president's case and the White House counsel's case that they have been acting consistently with law.
And let's go now to Ken Roth. Case closed?
Oh, I wish that were the case. In many ways, these documents raise more questions than they answer. For example, President Bush quite rightfully said yesterday that he would not authorize torture and that he's against torture. But then we have evidence from these documents that his own defense secretary did authorize torture in a couple of cases, at least during a brief period and possibly longer. During that brief period, we know that he allowed two techniques that are plainly torture. One is allowing people to be put in painful stress positions. The memo said for 4 hours. He wrote in there, what do you mean only 4 hours? You know, I could do this for eight, referring to standing, but that was only one of the techniques. There are other much more painful positions that are used. Second, he authorized allowing the interrogator to pretend that he was from a country that abused detainees. In other words, to threaten torture. And threatening torture is torture. That's absolutely clear. So question number one for President Bush is, what's he going to do with his defense secretary?
He generally says he's doing a superb job when asked the question. Doug Kamek, you obviously disagree with Ken Roth on what constitutes torture and what was authorized.
Well, and I think everybody who's studied the question disagrees with Ken on that question, because people in the field need specific guidance, and international treaties tend to speak at a very high level of generality. And so what all of these memoranda are about is, tell me specifically what's okay. And what we see here is everybody from staff lawyers in the Department of Defense on up to the General Counsel, on up to the Attorney General, on up to the President of the United States saying, look, humane treatment, restrained treatment is the only practice that the United States has ever followed, and we don't approve of torture. They categorized interrogation techniques into three categories. And for a very brief period of time, yes, stress positions were allowed. But I think it is an enormous stretch to say that there is any legal authority, let alone ample legal authority, that suggests that the application of stress is the equivalent of severe physical, mental, or physical pain, or prolonged or extreme acts of torture, which are prohibited by the international convention.
Yeah, I think if Doug has ever spoken to somebody who has been in one of these painful stress positions for half an hour, let alone for 4 hours, he would quickly change his mind. That is torture, pure and simple. Second, the so-called, what they call deception, which is they define as, you know, pretending that you're from a nation that abuses prisoners. They actually authorize deception after that initial period. So it's a fallacy to say that Rumsfeld authorized torture only for a brief period. Deception was allowed even after he revised the terms. Plus, I think it's important to note that while the president sort of almost ritualistically say we're going to treat people humanely, that exists or coexists with orders that we know did not constitute humane treatment. Because the prohibition in international law is not only about torture, it also prohibits cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment. Mm-hmm. And noticeably, yesterday, indeed systematically, whenever President Bush talks about this, he says, oh, we won't torture. But he refuses to say we will not engage in coercive interrogation of the sort that constitutes cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment. That's very intentional, because the administration policy at the very top is to continue ratcheting up the pain, suffering, and humiliation that detainees feel until they start talking. That is illegal. It's not torture necessarily, but it is prohibited cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment. And that is what the administration has to disown at this stage.
Doug Kamek, I suspect we're not going to come to some agreement on this question, but I'll allow you one more time to come back on it.
Well, Ken is quite right that which is prohibited by our Eighth Amendment as cruel and unusual punishment or cruel and inhuman treatment is what we have agreed to as a matter of law. I don't think there is any evidence in these documents that anyone from the president on down to the mid-levels authorized such behavior. Instead, what we see is even when a somewhat extraordinary interrogation technique involving stress levels or other forms of aggressive questioning might be used, was that always was there the instruction that this was only to be done with specific authorization in the presence of military necessity, and then there was to be medical personnel and others who were there to safeguard the integrity of the detainee. I don't think more could be asked of the United States in the response to an attack against its homeland.
Ken Roth, I can hear you disagreeing, but I want to move on to some other questions. Okay. First, I have to say we're talking about the documents that were released yesterday by the White House. We're speaking with Ken Roth of Human Rights Watch and with Doug Kamek, a professor of constitutional law at Pepperdine University. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get to a caller on the line. Robert is with us from New Orleans.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Robert.
Hi, I had a comment and perhaps a question for Mr. Roth specifically. At what point in time does he feel that this aggressive questioning crosses the line and becomes torture? Because I would think that when you're talking about people who haven't eaten and haven't slept and have confined themselves in boxes, you know, underground for days upon end, that it's rather plain that they can take quite a lot of what we might consider abuse here.
That's a good question. And I would refer to the Army Interrogation Manual, which actually does a very good job of drawing the line. It explains that what you can do is certainly use harsh questioning. You can use deception of the sort that you can lie to the person, not suggest he's going to be tortured, but you can lie. You can trick them. You can use ruses. That's all legit. What you can't do is ratchet up the pain and suffering. And to use the argument of military necessity to justify torture, which is what I hear Doug doing, is just ridiculous. I mean, international law is categorical. Regardless of the emergency, even if you are at war, you can never torture, you can never engage in this kind of coercive interrogation of the sort that's known as cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment. That is categorical in international law.
I would agree that, you know, the abuses that we've seen at the prison have, like, crossed the line. But at some point in time, you know, like, it's mere sleep deprivation or like dietary changes or replacing somebody in a cold cell without clothes really torture, or is this just a way of trying to make them a little bit more susceptible to providing us with the information we desperately need?
Yeah, well, obviously these are gradations, and nobody's going to pretend that if you miss your nap, you know, that that's somehow torture, or that, you know, if you get a skimpy lunch or something. But if you are deliberately ratcheting up the pain and suffering in order to force somebody to talk, that's what's prohibited. There are lots of ways to trick somebody to talk. In fact, the FBI finds the most effective way to get people to talk is actually to treat them respectfully. But regardless, what you cannot do is use coercion. That coercive approach is flatly illegal, and there are no necessity exceptions or anything of the sort.
Robert, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Doug Kamek, Democratic Congresswoman Jane Harman, who's the ranking Democrat on the Intelligence Committee in the House of Representatives, said today she's not satisfied with the release of these documents because there are many other documents that on this point that the Defense Department has not released. If they're going to come clean, shouldn't they come clean?
Well, I don't know what Congressman Harman is thinking about, but I've spent many hours now digesting these documents, and one of the things that's clear is that all of the central figures or the core figures who were involved in trying to provide guidance have been heard from, and the documents are now starting to repeat themselves, so portions are being quoted, and there's a great deal of redundancy that appears. So if there's something specific that Jane Harman has in mind, she should say what it is.
I think that she referenced documents at the Defense Department rather than the White House.
Well, but Neil, even in this batch of documents, there's quite a bit from the Defense Department, including memos from the Secretary of Defense, memos to the Secretary of Defense, memos from field commanders asking for additional guidance, as well as pleading for additional means of interrogation, because while they have been able to gain information, they haven't been successful in getting information from others. And, you know, there is also, to just respond to Ken's previous point about the previous techniques used by the Army and the military, there's a good deal of effort here in the Defense Department documents to connect up what is being done here in the war on terror to what was done under previous field manuals, and in particular the standards in the field manual that had allowed for approved techniques in terms of direct, incentive, emotional, fear-based, futility-based, and multiple interrogator-based forms of interrogation.
Good lawyers never forget previous points, do they? Ken Roth, let me ask you, and we just have a very brief second for this, but the administration declined to release a lot of this information, saying, look, if we reveal our techniques, people can train against it. Exposing this information does affect U.S. security in a way.
It does, although I would argue that what has done much greater damage to American security is the use of these abusive techniques. Abu Ghraib has been a disaster for American security, and whatever marginal increase in information might have been obtained, and apparently it was relatively little, it has been vastly outweighed by the cost of this nation's security, because I can assure you that al-Qaeda is using the photos from Abu Ghraib and the news about abusive interrogation techniques as a wonderful recruiting tool. It is a disaster for this nation.
And just a reminder, if you want to read some of these papers, you can head to npr.org, the papers that were released by the White House last night. Thanks to our guest, Doug Kamek. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Nice to be with you, Neil.
Doug Kamek, Chair and Professor of Constitutional Law at Pepperdine University, with us on the phone from Malibu, California. Ken Roth, thank you very much.
Thank you, Neil.
Ken Roth, Executive Director of Human Rights Watch, joined us from our bureau in New York. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.